ain't going down. I ain't going down, oh honey, to the well no more. Whoa. And I ain't got nothing, and I can't stand nothing. Whoa. They said you were a true believer, but I am the true believer. Yes, I am the true believer. Whoa. I ain't going down. I ain't going down. Oh, honey, to the well.
Good evening, everyone. This is a November edition of Poet Radio on WGXC, Hudson Acre. My name is Chris, the host of the program. And today, my guest is Wanda Phipps. Wanda is someone I've known for many years. And to give you a little background on Wanda, she was raised in Washington, D.C., and went to New York City for school and has been essentially based there. She's worked at St. Mark's Poetry Project, been involved with the Yara Arts Group, of which she is a founding member. Her poems and translations have been extensively published in little mags and journals, and she has published several books, most recent of which is Mind Honey, published by Altana Media earlier this year. I met Wanda at the Naropa Institute in the early 90s, and we had connected well with each other. And I remember a great evening of performances we were part of 30 years ago at the Gargoyle Mechanique Laboratory. You remember that one, Wanda?
Sure, yeah.
In the little storefront theater on Avenue B. And a few months later, we published her work on a cassette edition of We Magazine. And we recently reconnected, and Wanda was part of this year's Subterranean Poetry Fest at the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale. Recordings of that reading were featured on the show a couple of months ago, and we began the program with Wanda's version of a Lead Belly song. It was great to hear that in that cave, Wanda. You were really with the natural reverb and the dripping of the moisture off of the roof of the cave. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that, but it was exciting to hear you singing. I think everybody thinks that is the high point of that reading, in fact.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I did listen to it, and it sounded interesting. It was very different than the experience of doing it, you know, and hearing the echo coming back and the sound of the cave. And that was the most interesting place I've ever read in, I think, other than like maybe the Wonder Wheel at Coney Island. I did a reading on the Ferris wheel there once.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow.
Was that a formal event, or was that something that you...
It was a benefit for, and now I can't remember the name of the organization, but they were teaching like poetry to kids there in the area, and also like getting like books for them and for the library, and it was a benefit for that. And we actually, we gave like these little private readings to people who could fit into the cars on the Ferris wheel. Oh. It was wonderful. Like the sun was starting to set, and we were like reading poetry, you know, to like two or three people in the car. And it was wonderful.
That does sound really amazing. Exciting. Yeah. I noticed the book was your new book, Mind Honey, is published by Altana Media, which is exciting. I think of Altana Media as a really active and almost sometimes activist publishing group. I was wondering how this whole thing came about.
Well, Tana Media has kind of an imprint by the Unbearables, which is a group of poets and fiction writers and visual artists that they used to be based on the Lower East Side, and now they're sort of like spread all over, but and they perform together all the time. And I was kind of an honorary member of the Unbearables, and I've been in their anthologies. And so they've been publishing a lot of poetry and also fiction lately with the Autonomy Media imprint.
I didn't know that they had an Unbearables imprint. It's cool. It's a beautiful, beautiful book with you know, Yuko Otomo's cover.
That's lovely. I'm so thankful to her for that. It's really beautiful.
Well, let's see. The other thing I've noticed, and I don't know, maybe we should hear some of the poems first and then talk about them, but it's got an interesting organization of the book with the different sections, which make perfect sense. The transported section has your subway and bus poems, and, you know, the body and spirit section, you know, addresses things related to mind and body, and you have rituals, so ritual section, communion section, work section, and then this oddly titled Lilac Wine and Mood Swing Mix Whiskey
section. Oh yeah, well, those are poems mostly about mood swings, you know, the ups and the downs, and talking about that, I suppose. In rituals, they're experiments, mostly like poetic experiments in form. And the communion section is about communication, and the work is, of course, about work. Or a lot of them, some of them are written at work, so right. On breaks and things.
Well, where would you like to start? Which of these, which sections go to?
Which section? Well, I chose some random poems from different sections. This one, I wanted to read this because I rarely read this one. It's an older poem, and it's in a sort of very free associational style. It's called Hysteria Bliss, and it's just fun to read, so I wanted to start with that. Hysteria Bliss. Oh God, I will not eat. I am all energy, and all my muscles are convulsing to a vision, singing as my wings are singed. And all is nothing, and there are no edges, no ends. I am whole and utterly fragmented. I dream of dreamless sleep, sleepless dreams, and am not in control of my madness. Flying thoughts, voracious hunger for the beautiful to fill me, purge me, empty me, gas me out, steaming, crawling, scrawling, senses blazing. Say yes, and there exists a no, and in between there are both, and both are, and both will be, as life and death, love and death, birth and death, and death and death. Whispers engulf me, spirits in my head, heart. You are too tired, but only to stutter, able only to stutter mouthfuls of expectancies. And let the caverns echo, yes, let the caverns hollow, be, become whatever will become. It doesn't matter. All meaningless but the being, all nothinglessness is completeness. It is the searching that has left the hunger, but the fullness leaves the giving, a need resembling hunger. Oh, yes, and I am tired and cannot sleep, and you are lonely and cannot love, and we are miles and miles apart, together in our separate sufferings. Pain is pleasure as a part of life, and pleasure only the peak when valleys kiss them neck and neck like cleavaged breasts, milk nursing humanity, nourish, feed, and find an end when there is none.
That's like a perfect example of the mood swing poem.
Right. Hysteria. Is that what the section is in?
Yeah, it was a hysteria.
Yes, it is.
Hysteria Bliss.
Hysteria Bliss, yes. Yes.
Dichotomy. Although probably somebody could be blissful in hysteria if they really had the countenance to do that or something. You know.
That's true. It's kind of like euphoric feeling that can be kind of manic. That could be like blissful and hysteric.
Some people are like addicted to that state. I mean, certainly, I don't think that's an enviable position, but I've known people who've claimed to be so.
Yeah, Evel Knievel kind of thing.
Thrive. All right, great. That's a good energetic start. You seem to have selected a few poems, so let's just go through.
Okay, here's another. It's called Plush. plush, luscious L in lakes of lips. My purple sunset prize, V verse for victory, victorious rapture, home like honey, E enormous tapestry, true. Oh, my luscious enormity, luscious, oh, my vocabulary, immense. Versify my, oh, vociferous lips, language lull, empty of honey, pearl my vice, sticks sure on evening sill, enormous lair of vacancy, language sugar, entirety sweet, verify my little pearl deep.
Since I'm looking at these poems in the book as you read them, one thing I just wanted to bring up, because I noticed it, was that the form is so different. You know, you're the first poem you read was the lines are so much longer. In fact, it's almost like it's a paragraph, a prose
right,
poem. Almost
prose poem, yeah.
And this one is, two, 3 words per line. I mean, that's not uncommon, and poets do this, but how does that come about for you, the different styles?
Well, it seems sometimes that the poem sort of dictates what the form will be, like, because Hysteria Bliss was this sort of almost like, I don't want to say vomiting, that sounds disgusting, but vomiting of like emotions, like outpouring, like the outpouring was so like kind of relentless that, you know, it deserved sort of more longer prose lines and lines with dashes running into each other and kind of overflowing like a waterfall. And Plush was sort of, I was exploring the ideas and words connected with the letters of the word love. I mean, you can see there's like, I don't know, the words love are capitalized in.
Yeah, it's almost like a misostic type arrangement.
Yes.
Well, sorry to interrupt you there if you're on a flow, but
that's it.
On me, and it's cool.
And sometimes it's hard to say what I was thinking, because the poems in this book come from such a large period of time, you know, a large time span. And so I remember the feeling when I wrote them, when I read them, but I can't necessarily remember, you know, what was really going on during that time period in my life and like what kind of inspired the shape of them. You know, they're sort of their own beings now, you know.
Do you have a repertoire that goes back decades now, right? And it's interesting to me. I noticed I recently listened to the Truth to Power podcast, and you were reading some poems on there that I recognized from like the early 90s, but yet they were published in a book that was much more recently published. So you're drawing from, you know, your whole, like, let's call it a career in a way for these books. Is that right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that's true.
That's interesting. I mean, there's so many poets, not everybody, but a lot of poets, you know, their most recent book is their most recent
work.
Or
right.
At least the collection that was put together, you know, around the same time.
Right.
But, that's interesting to me that you're able to kind of curate retrospectively in this way.
That's true. Well, the only book that was really like that, encompassing only one period of time, was my first book, Wake Up Calls, 66 Morning Poems. Those were all written, during 2 months, 2 months or so. And it's just one experiment of just writing in the morning, first thing in the morning or first thing getting up, you know.
Did you want to read from the Wake Up Calls?
Oh, I could. That's true. Like, since I just, you know, talked about it. What should I read?
We'll go back to Mind Honey, because that Mind Honey is so fresh and new. But
all right, I'll read Morning Poem Number 2, Again and Again. Morning sounds, birds coughing, secret creaks in floors, ceiling, hidden parts, garbage trucks, wake-up groans, hearts suspended mid-dream. Planes hover, daytime sneaks in with a slowly building clarity, a slight pain also. Still stubborn, persistent time moves, continually placing one moment after the next, keeping all from seeing all things from happening at once. Stepping In Again, stories we play over and over, top 10 psychic hits, spinning nonstop. My costume tonight is Max Ernst, half bird, half woman, half in a waking state, half asleep, part in the moment before this, and part in the moment to come. Flight takes me, or rather wakes me up to where I can speak.
Yeah, the poems, these poems are so immediate. They're so in the moment.
Let's see, should I read another one from?
Sure, this one,
okay, this one is pretty different than the last one. And it was recently published on the Best American Poetry blog, which is kind of cool. Morning poem number 27. I should have stayed here with the beautiful, strong, cold Corinna May. I should have stayed here all those years ago with the known and familiar. I shouldn't have called so much. I shouldn't have been so callous. I should have stuck by you after recovery. I should have moved to DC when you asked me to. I should have taken that editing job. I should have taken that TV PA job. I should have gone through with that graduate school acceptance. I should have loved you when we first met. I should have been a performance poet, a spoken word artist. I should have gone every place I was afraid to go. I should have helped you find an apartment. I should have been more interesting and less the clinging vine. I should have protested loudly about some things and not at all about others. I should have learned Spanish and German. I shouldn't have been so easily discouraged. I should have listened to my mother. My life could have been so much better by now.
But some of these things actually came to be.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, you should. I mean, we'll talk about this a little more in a little while. You should have been a performance poet.
You're one of the
premier performance poets, right? I mean, that's what you're.
Okay. Done
over the year. Well, I guess I can, you know, since we're jumping around a little bit, I mean, I noticed via your social media feed that once once people began to get the vaccines and events started to happen, you have had a really serious performance agenda. You've done many readings.
Yes, I've been reading a lot lately. That's true. Also, during the pandemic, I did lots of virtual readings, which was interesting.
And you're a performer. I mean, you are a performance poet. So you're,
if you say so, okay.
I know that this is true.
I guess it depends on who's listening and their opinion. I wouldn't say that, you know.
All right. But I mean, that also connects. I'm also associating you with the work you've done as a, you know, drama in theater. I mean, so you have definitely have an interest in performance, stage performance. And, you know, I do think that translates over to your own, presentational style. You know, you
have that's true. Yeah, I did study acting, and at one point I wanted to be an actress, and I did a little bit of acting. That's true. But yeah, I think I do try to bring that to, you know, my readings, so to make them more interesting. But
yeah, I mean,
but I wouldn't call myself a performance poet because I don't know.
But then the next line is I should have been a performance poet, a spoken word artist. So I mean, all right. Anyway,
no, but I feel like I always feel like, you know, people can call me that, but, you know, in my head, that's not really, you know, a label. I mean, that's one of the things I do. That's but it's not all that I do, you know, because I write poems for the page too that are just as interesting to read and not like, you know, they don't have to be performed. You know what I mean? And then there are other poems that have more performative elements in them. They're really fun to read, so I tend to read those more. And then there are others that are quieter and softer and kind of do different things.
I get that.
So.
You know, one of the things I can also say, since I'm watching you and you're holding up, at first when you're reading from Mindhoney, you had the pages of the, you weren't reading from the book, but I could see on the page it actually said in brackets like 27 seconds. So
you've timed
the poem. So that's something like someone working on stage would do, right? Right? Because you have
People, you know, when you're asked to read, usually they say, "Oh, you have 20 minutes. You have half an hour. You have 15 minutes. You have 10 minutes." So yeah, I don't want to go. You know, I don't want to be rude and go over time. I grew up in DC, but my family is from North Carolina. So it's part of my kind of like trying to sort of not be rude and my upbringing, not to go over time and kind of something about like outstaying my welcome. Yes.
Still a good tactic for a performer too, to be aware.
Yeah, I do. Like usually I kind of like, I think about the structure, the reading, you know, like good opener and like a good, you know, finale poem at the end and like, you know, what the transitions between one poem and another. But actually that's one of the, I was going to talk about that. That's one of the hardest things for me to do is to choose what to read or to choose what to submit to like a journal or an anthology or whatever. And also to structure a manuscript. Those are the hardest things for me to do. So today I thought it would be more free form. So I took a bunch of poems, you know, but I didn't actually structure them.
Right, right. So far so good. Maybe we should, I'm glad we went back to Wake Up Calls, and I hope you can maybe touch on some of your other books as well. But I mind Honey being so fresh and to me and others exciting, maybe we should
go back
to that a little bit, or where we can go wherever you like. I mean, I have, did you pick anything out from the experimental section?
Again, yeah, I chose again. I could do that one, which is part of the ritual section. Again, a diphthong, a prayer, intensity, then always the calm center, like the eye of a storm, materials always in flux. A diphthong, a prayer. We are all in the trails of comets, in the birth of new stars, in the death of cold galaxies. A diphthong, a prayer. I pose a possibility and all our lives change, evolving into fresh, free utopias. A diphthong, a prayer. Intensity, then always, can we do it without vodka, without pot, without heroin, without the sweet falsetto of my favorite dead pop singer? Intensity, then always, I watched the dance last time. Instead of slowly growing closer, I pulled back. Intensity, then always, as if repelled by the hands of a stranger in a strange place, lovers too long apart. Intensity, then always the calm center, the voices that speak telepathically between them, drowned out by a foreign language neither one remembers. The calm center. Understanding only bits and pieces, a word here, a declaration there, a seductive whisper. Routes, options, pathways, journeys, the calm center. Unknown possibilities, like the eye of a storm, cloud our vision until we clearly see only apparitions. So that's one from the ritual section. Let's see. I could do some others if you want. Is that a section that particularly interests you?
There isn't one section I would say that I find more interesting than another, but when you were sort of summarizing the type of material in there, I would say that, you know, this is a more experimental, we could look at those, but I also love the, you know, travel works and others stand out.
Okay, here's one, patterns number 4. There are fathers, parliaments, aren't there? Signs for wavering in mind, to and fro confounded. He or they are plain ground plans for a building on a flat surface amongst a beat. We moot meeting of wise men, parliament, kill at sex in the clear day, and good for nothing with anxiety of wild wastelands. We hammer up towards an explosion of a strict plank flatboard tableau.
So the title, like patterns number 4, there are other.
Yes, there are other versions of that. Yeah, in the series, but this was the best one. So, And don't ask me how I wrote it because I don't remember. I just know it was like, you know, an experiment of using certain words and combining certain words in different ways. And I think it might have been from a Bernadette Mayer workshop a long time ago.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I know that you have a connection with Bernadette, and Bernadette has been someone who's inspired you. You were part of some of her workshops at the Poetry Project?
Yes, yes. Originally, I took a workshop with her at the Poetry Project, writing workshop. And then after that was over, she asked some people if they wanted to continue studying with her. And so we continued at her apartment for a while. And that was good. It's very good. And she's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, she's brilliant. And and Phil have been on this program before.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember you were talking about Midwinter Day on the podcast with...
Yes. That's my favorite book, one of my favorite books of poetry.
It's totally amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's interesting. It sort of inspired some of like wake-up calls, because the beginning of Midwinter's Day is about the dreams of the night before. And so that was one of my inspirations for that book and that experiment.
But it's grown. I mean, you took the workshop studying with Bernadette, and you still pursue, you know, alternative forms of writing?
Yes, that's true. That's true. Oh, that reminds me. I think in the podcast I was talking about one thing that I don't know if I did talk about that, but I had been thinking about it. After I came back, I was like in San Francisco. You said that I was in New York since, you know, I moved up here to go to school, but actually I spent some time, a couple of years in San Francisco, you know, after I finished school here in New York, and I went to study acting actually at American Conservatory Theater out in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And that's when I first went to Naropa, like one of the summers there. And I met Anne Waldman, I think when she was reading in San Francisco at the San Francisco Art Institute. I met her there, and then she convinced me to go to Naropa for the summer, and that was great. But then when I came back to New York, I was really having problems with my writing. I had kind of a block, and I had all these notes, and I didn't know what to do with them. I couldn't edit them. And then I talked to Bernadette, and she said, why edit them? Just throw them all into one poem. And I did, and it was wonderful. And I said, that's amazing. So, yeah.
Do you have
I love Bernadette. Yeah, I was trying to think, like, which one was it? I have, like, that poem in my second book, Field of Wanting, Poems of Desire. Well, actually, I could read one poem I wrote for Bernadette in this book, in the Zither Mood section. It's for Bernadette. I could read that one.
Fabulous.
For Bernadette. Trembling little female bear, burning pigeon-toed little girl bear, paws cupped in inverted prayer, a casual mudra held at the crotch. I always stand watching door closing, kiss my forehead, my cheek, see my hand brushing your hair from your face, stroking hair, fur, fuzzy halo. Such a pretty little bear, big girl, man, woman, such a pretty one with such violent thoughts. Such a pretty mama bear, papa's going, such a way with words and women, such a way with big bear hugs, beer brewing up blood and sex, fire red-faced bear in constant agitation, I hold your hand for strength.
Oh, sweet. Very sweet.
Yeah. And I'm trying to find... Moving, returning. That's it. Returning. 135. Returning. Yes, that's it. Returning, because it's about returning from San Francisco and the Bay Area to New York. Okay, I can read this one. I haven't read this in a really long time. Okay.
Great.
Returning. What world would I write if I were to write today? Perhaps minute details, peppermint tea leaves in the sink, or the day's sounds, shrieking engines, sounds of the sugar plant, scrap metal being sifted. Charles calls to see if I'm okay, making notes of names of people I've met that I'm sad I never got to know. Hey, I know him. We sat around the same beer tables. He knew my face when I knew his, or I'm sure she'll remember my name, but not the body it belongs to. Old gray heads of wisdom I wish I'd siphoned a little off of, or great young bodies that might have held some excitement in the holding of. Regrets, a sign of age or innocence. To move more deeply into mystery, using knowledge to be innocent again, I'd seal the ocean into a translucent bubble blown by a two-year-old and popping on a dog's ear. 1:35 a.m. She said, I don't want to see those two ever again. She was incensed because we wouldn't talk about the spirituality of Bob Dylan instead of football. I guess if we can get the zebra in and Porky, the professional boyfriend, Jim, will perform his primal scream into a pillow. Cats on the road to food whoredom lick the countertops. Buddha's gotten bigger by self-advertising. Threw up on the Persian rug. Yes, I'll flush it. They really need zebras. They need silver and gold zebras and giraffes. France is like Connecticut. That's all I need to come home every day to a 4-foot gypsy woman. Watching forever, still life as fetish, a camera eroticizes space, smoke from the domino sugar plant, sirens and buzzers from the domino sugar plant. List number one, sugar, popcorn, ginger ale, and butter too. List number two, Marlboro, Newport, Winston, Benson and Hedges Gold, Salem 100s, Tootsie Rolls. Taking successive time-lapsed photos of a stolen red Buick, slowly disassembled each night for a month, leaving empty carcass. There's a glass dome over New York City, intensifying daymares. Blood from a bald man's head, watching Puerto Rican couple embracing. Pretty hooker in black on Kent Avenue says, good morning, have a nice Sunday. What's the matter? Not much, end of subject. Next Tuesday, you can vote for a liberal. We'll give you this GETV free. I took my staff and swept the sky from blue to all colors of the spectrum, and I rode a multicolored magic carpet with the wind waving goodbye. Stained glass window bayed behind his head, a holy meeting, a sermon of poets, head silhouetted, voices reverberating, walls holding echoes. We watch hands gesticulating, feel breath in and out, flies light in hair. I woke up and then they all died. Each morning, consecrate yourself to be dependent. Becoming black leather knight's courtesan, returning. Many well-known and half-known faces rest here for me. I feel safe, my body secure and sure on the dangerous streets and trains of Brooklyn. Thinking of my old knight in shining black leather, walking in a midday downpour, leaning in night break, he asks, have you ever wanted a tattoo? There are slacks out there hanging like sets of Venetian blinds. Because we have language, a peculiar relationship, separation or settling is a normal occurrence. Language is the parasite the poem invades. For a miner of huge dark plums in subway atriums, this is perfect music for a snowstorm. How does a human being fulfill the role of Mother Goose in a burning palazzo with transposed heads? Many spirits hide in the corners of our houses because they are not round. The baby boa's been out for 2 days now, drumming heartbeats in the background, summoning Laurie Anderson's sadomasochistic, narcissistic adolescent rituals. Romance is always violence. We are ever postmodern people. America was built by teamwork, says a recent TV commercial. She looks like she's walking through a cow pasture. She looks like she's uncomfortable in shoes. She looks like she's always falling out of her clothes. They love slipping and sliding from her body. She's clinging, yielding, grasping. She's the softer one. She moves slowly. She loves to laugh, to giggle. All speech beginning with a quick intake of breath, mouth lingering over vowels and snapping at the consonants, words tangled in that languid accent. She's the body. And she's the other one, a quieter one, a small, tight face. She thinks before she speaks. She moves deliberately, always. She's well put together. She's mystery. She's the illusion. She's a deep well. She's the mind. We all have longings and desires which we try to satisfy in this world with sensual pleasures. If you thirst, come to me. Even so, I am constant in my affection for you. Only a bundle of myrrh is what world I wouldn't be.
Wow.
Okay. Wow.
Take it. That was amazing to hear such a dense, spontaneously unprepared poem. Very cool, Wanda. I'm glad that our meandering session here led us to that.
Oh yeah, I wasn't planning to read that, as you could tell by my little stumbles. But and I haven't read it in such a long time. But yeah, that's the book that the poem that Bernadette helped me by saying, just throw all the fragments in there.
That's almost like I don't mean to like be stereotypical or anything, but the New York School, I mean, that was that, you know, in sort of the pastiche mode of the New York School, like Frank O'Hara, you know, dropping different bits in. But yeah, it accumulates and, I would say coheres, you know, that's the idea.
I think so too. Yeah.
That's very nice.
It's sort of like this prism of like different aspects of, this experience of returning to New York from San Francisco.
Yeah, you know, somehow I completely missed the San Francisco part, but that's a very
narrative. I was there for 2 years,
Oh, very cool. Likewise in the Bay Area, but not maybe at the same time or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I want to remind listeners that they're in tune to Poet Radio, and my guest this month is Wanda Phipps. And Wanda, one of the things that we sort of touched on a little bit earlier was when we were debating the fact whether or not you were a performance poet or not, but it was your work with different media, and this is something that has always interested me, and I thought maybe we could talk about it a little bit more. I have forgotten until I was looking at your bio that you have worked with bands, and you have, I know you as a singer, someone who sings, but are you doing anything with musicians these days?
Well, I don't know. I love to sing, and I used to have a band, and then I also performed sometimes poetry and music singing with maybe sometimes a single guitar, sometimes a guitar and bass, or like two guitars, or sometimes with just percussion. But I haven't really been doing that lately for a long time. But recently, I've been doing some things with this musician. He's also a writer, Chris Rail, and he set some of my poems to music as songs, and he's been singing them. And then recently we did an event. There's this woman, Susan Wong, who runs something called the Bushwick Book Club. I don't know if you've heard of it, but she chooses like a book, and every month she invites different songwriters to read the same book and then write a song inspired by the book. And then she books a venue and they perform it all in the same night. So we did at the Red Room above KGB Bar. We were doing this anthology that I was included in, The Poets of Queens. And so he turned two of my poems into songs. And then he asked me to sing backup with him on one of them. So I was like singing with him on that recently. And then he's also, I think he's written music for or turned three other poems of mine into songs that he's been singing. And
that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Also that night there was a woman who the Bushwick book club night, she is a comedian, and she took one of my poems and wrote this kind of like comedic spoken word thing based on the poem, one of my pandemic diary poems. And she had like this whole band of collection of musicians from that night play backing her up on that. And that was interesting too.
And you mentioned in the Truth to Power podcast that during the pandemic you had started playing guitar again.
Well, playing again, yes. Like over the years, I've wanted to learn to play the guitar, and I've taken lessons off and on, and then I, you know, put it away and I stopped, you know, because I'm really not that great. But yeah, oh, and also like Chris Rail was giving me informal lessons, and then, you know, I was taking some online lessons. And yes, I'm trying to definitely learn how to play guitar now.
That's cool. And you did some interesting recordings that are available on SoundCloud few years ago with other you collaborate with a number of people, right?
Yes.
You were working with artist Stephen Antonakos, is that right?
Yes, the musician Stephen Antonakos. He's mostly a guitarist, but he recorded that and arranged it, and all the words are mine, and they were actually plucked from poems. I think the words for that song were all plucked from poems, and then we came up with the melody together. And unfortunately, he passed like last year, COVID related.
But you like to do more recordings?
I would. Yes, I would. So, I'm open to it.
It sounds good. I mean, your voice is, you know, so strong.
Yeah.
So,
and I did perform a lot with Stephen a while back, like a couple of years ago. And yeah.
And you've been connected with the various theater groups, and you've done, you've traveled, you know, over to Ukraine and to Russia with theater groups and writing for stage productions.
Yes. I'm a founding member of Yara Arts Group, which is a theater group that's a resident company at La Mama. So we do a piece there, but it's also very much sort of cultural, international kind of exchange where we work with artists, mostly in Eastern Europe, because the artistic director is Ukrainian-American.
And what's happening with Yara now?
What's happening with Yara now? Now she's actually, she has a residency in Kharkiv now, and we're Skyping, working on translating. Cause she calls me her co-translator, and to me, it's sort of adapting these poems into English, because she does the rough translation into English. And then I work with her after that on the poems that we use mostly in the theater productions. And so she's working on developing like a new piece there now. And so we're like Skyping and working on material. And then there's also another book. We have like a couple of books out of our translations. There's Yale University Press put out one a few years ago. And then we have another coming out next year. And then possibly there was like a play we translated quite a while ago. And we've done like several different versions of it, different types of productions. There was a virtual, it was called Forest Song. And there was a virtual version of it during the pandemic. And then they actually just did another live version of it in outdoors, which is really beautiful. And they did two other versions earlier, several years ago. And so there's interest. I think Harvard might want to publish it. The Ukrainian Institute there, they might publish it.
And One of your translations or co-translations was in the New York Times recently.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, we were, the book, the Yale book we did a while ago was all of poems by Serhiy Zhadan, who's like very popular in Ukraine now and a wonderful poet. And so one of our translations of one of his poems was featured in the New York Times Sunday magazine, I think in August.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And the other thing I came across and that I was not aware of previously was this film poem for Wanda Phipps.
But what do you mean you weren't aware of it?
I wasn't aware of it until like I'm doing some research, getting ready for this. I haven't seen it, but I was very curious to know more about it.
Oh, well, that's Joel Schlemowitz, and he actually did several short films, experimental shorts based on using my poems. And some of them I'm reading the poem as voiceover. I think he did like a couple, and that was one of them. That was the first one. It was, film poem for Wanda Phipps. Yeah, I'm trying to remember which poem it was. No, this is from Field of Wanting, my second book. Funky Sonnet number 3. In my movie, I'd shoot a woman walking through her day. Careful attention to dress hems and footsteps, fingertips, soup spoons, eyelashes, doorknobs, backs, umbrellas moving. Beneath, I'd hear a voice describing random scenes from dreams and fragments of conversations, also much street sound, and occasionally the breath, slow-mo frames of the fluctuating expressions of her face. So that's the one that Joel made a film of, or one of the ones. He made a couple using my poems.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And there was it images of, not of you reading, or was it?
No, it wasn't me reading. No, it was like images street scenes, you know, and it was beautiful in black and white. I think he did some stop motion stuff with it. It's beautiful.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, or I thought to ask you about, and it's only been kind of amplified by the fact that I'm looking at you in your bookshelf in the background, and I'm seeing these titles that are jumping out at me, the new Jim Crow, Dark Ghetto. Oh. And so I know that you're not an overtly political poet. I was wondering if I could get you to talk a little bit about how things have changed for you, if at all, over the past two or three decades with regards to being a Black poet, working your way through, cultural issues or having experiences one way or another. And if you have anything to say, I kind of wanted to open that up and just to see if there have been any shifts that you've recognized.
Well, you mean for me personally,
yeah,
or like in general? I mean, in general in society, of course, there's been shifts. I mean, there's, you know, during the pandemic, you know, the whole, well, anyway.
Lives Matter.
Yes. Okay. Something popped up on my screen. I think like most of my writing career, I've sort of resisted the idea of like being like the, having or being expected to be like the spokesperson for Black America.
No, I know that, and I remember.
And so I still feel that way. I still feel that, like, you know, individual experience is more important to write about, and because it forges connections between people beyond their differences. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. I was really happily surprised to hear you read your poem, This Is an Angry Poem.
Yes,
which I had remembered on the podcast, which I had remembered from years and years and years ago. I mean, that sticks with me, and you know, this idea of resisting identity politics is you know, perfectly legit, and you know, or dipping into it once in a while. But I, as you said to begin with in this like part of the conversation, there have been shifts over the past few, you know, over the past decades. And I think like a situation like in New York is much more embracing, you know, and much more expansive and inclusive, but maybe there's more to it than I don't know, but, you know, I figured it'd be worth asking you, to share anything you wanted to share.
That's probably all I would want to say. That poem that I read, like, this is an angry poem, is probably the only, like, overtly political poem I've ever written. I mean, one that you could put in that category. Although in this book, there's this poem, which I had planned to read, another subway poem.
Let's go ahead and do that.
In Mine Honey, which touches on it a little bit. I mean, I just read recently, there's this thing they do every year. You know, Michael Rothenberg runs this 100,000 Poets for Change. And so I read this one at one of the New York readings for that. Another subway poem. Startled by a feeling of purposelessness, not knowing the day of the week or time of year, confusing one loving touch with another, the memories of each fitting together, spoons quietly stacked in an empty cupboard. Rush hour without the rush, that particular unfocused face, imagining the space is more than it is. Difference. A simple refocusing of an eye means of recreating otherness. Rocking of a sweet swing, baby cradle, pelvis sex locked, rhythm swaying to a mighty raucous music, metal rumbling as we roll into Brooklyn. Everything is political, a baby carriage making its way around a subway pole, power plays, rethinking positions, including the correct stance for reading paperbacks on rush hour trains. Politics as a valid escape from your immediate life, like reading books and writing and love. Motion simulates progress, social change masquerading as meaning in a life, justice as a tight grip on one view of reality. Nonviolent protesters fight all for what they want, including each other. I'm a soldier, his truth is marching. If I'm on one side, there's always someone on the other, and in between's the space that separates us, in our minds, the space that separates us.
I'm so glad to hear you read that poem. You know, you are addressing, you know, certain issues there, but not always maybe in the most, you know, direct way, right? There's so much subtlety to it, right? And when I heard you describe yourself as, you know, not overtly political poet, well, I began to start looking for things. And, you know, there's personal, and we all know that the personal sometimes becomes a political as well, so... Interesting one. Thanks for that, and proceeding with such a sensible take on things. Well, as I mentioned, we're getting towards the end, and I figure we should, you know, anything else you would like to present from the book?
Anything else? Let's see.
That you collected or got together with intent to read.
I could do a really short one if you want. If it's just for the ending.
Yeah, okay, that would be fine. Let me one last time remind everyone that my guest this month has been Juan Phipps. He's a recently published book called Mind Honey from Altana Media. It's been a great, great pleasure to have you on the program, Wanda. And
well, thank you, Chris.
All right. You're most welcome.
Well, maybe I could do two short ones.
Great.
They're really tiny. Okay. Peace thoughts. Cherished knowing opens onto a subtle waiting for peace thoughts, all revealing the soft fall of love also. And then this is None for Poetry. So here I am, a woman surrounded by words on paper and words invisible, waiting to be written. A nun for poetry, craving the asymmetrical saintliness of a ragged line in a well-bound book.
A perfect place to end, actually. I think that fits together nicely with many things we were talking about. So glad we got those out and onto the air tonight. If you want to know more about Wanda or what she's up to in the future, tune into Mindhoney. Meanwhile, also stay tuned to WGXC.org and 90.7 FM Hudson Acra. We'll be back next month in Poet Radio, and have a good one.
take the key out and see if the car still runs. Still runs, still runs. For all the reasons I desired you, things were glowing, glowing. Oh, let me jump. Push me, it's so bright. Let me fall into a field of wanting, a field of wanting, a field of wanting. I open the door and the wind sings, etc. Let me jump, let me jump. Madness as divinity, closer to the source, to the source, to the source. Oh, let me jump. Push me, it's so bright. Let me fall into a field of wanting, a field of wanting, a field of wanting. We are luminous twins under street lights on Avenue B, on Avenue B. Let's knock down the doors of heaven and horror in the field of time, in the field of time. Oh, let me jump. Push me, it's so bright. Let me fall into a field of wanting, a field of wanting.